Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, January 20th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, we got some video today. I've never seen your man cave where you work. It's pretty cool.
Thanks, man. It's a little bit cooler around the corner. That's where I have the lounge area with the couch and the TV, bookshelves and all that. But yeah, I got a nice little nook down here. We're going to bring you a little more video action to your social feeds. So that's kind of the game plan with this new setup. And we can I can look at your beautiful face every morning. So that's wonderful.
Oh, I'm sure you're looking forward to that 5 days a week. Oh, my God. I Josh Macri always used to say that in the mornings I would talk to him through the course of the year before noon more than he talked to his wife. And sadly, you're going to have to deal with this as we move forward. We start today with sad news. Hall of Fame pitcher Don Sutton has passed away at the age of 75. In his career, he won 324 games at a 3.26 ERA. Tim Kirkchin has some great memories of Don Sutton as we move forward. News of the day. Last night, George Springer agreed to a six-year, $150 million deal with the Toronto Blue Jays, who have been incredibly busy. They also agreed to terms with Kirby Yates to be their closer, pitcher Tyler Chatwood. And they're in the process now of talking with Michael Brantley. That lineup would be amazing. One of the questions I have for Tim is whether or not the Blue Jays lineup with Brantley, with Springer, is going to be better than the Yankees lineup. The Angels agreed to terms with Jose Quintana, 1 year at $8 million. Last week, the Yankees agreed to terms with DJ LeMahieu. His deal, 6 years for $90 million. Corey Kluber, 1 year at $11 million. The Nationals agreed to terms with John Lester. In the end, because of the way the contract is structured, Washington paying him just $2 million this year with $3 million in a buyout of a future option. I can't believe the Cubs didn't bring him back. Joe Musgrove traded to the San Diego Padres. A lot of people excited about that move and about their rotation. Today, we're going to be talking with Padres manager Jace Tingler. And, of course, we had the really ugly news that was broken by Meany Kimes and Jeff Passan. Jared Porter, before yesterday, the general manager of the New York Mets, acknowledged sending unsolicited, explicit images to a reporter while he was working for the Chicago Cubs. The woman that he sent it to is a foreign correspondent who had moved to the U.S. to cover Major League Baseball, said to Jeff and to Meany that at one point she ignored more than 60 messages from Porter, who was then working for the Cubs, as I mentioned before. He sent a final lewd photo. After receiving the most explicit image, the woman sent him a message asking him to stop. Porter responded in a series of texts saying he was sorry, would stop, and then he apologized. Reached by ESPN on Monday night, Porter acknowledged texting with the woman. He initially said he had not sent any pictures of himself. When told the exchanges show he had sent selfies and other pictures, he said that the more explicit ones are not of me. Those are kind of like joke stock images. That story broke at 11 o'clock on Monday night, just before 8 o'clock on Tuesday. Steve Cohen, the new owner of the Mets, announced that Jared Porter had been fired. Yesterday afternoon, Sandy Alderson, the Mets president, spoke with the reporters, and he talked about Jared Porter's reaction when he first spoke to him about it.
I wouldn't say that Jared was misleading. I think that, however, we didn't understand the full scope of this situation until we had a chance to read the article and ultimately also to see the video. But I didn't get to see the article itself until it was actually published, which was in the 10:30 to 11 timeframe. Talked to the writer about 10 o'clock and got 15 minutes from that point to complete a response because we didn't want to be silent in the article. But to answer your question directly, I don't want to suggest that Jared was not totally forthcoming. On the other hand, the full breadth of the situation was not really apparent to us until the article was written and we had a chance to read it.
Sandy was asked what his initial reaction was when he found out.
Look, I was shocked. You know, we had references from a variety of organizations, a number of individuals, people who had known him for a long time, people who endorsed him, who knew him from, you know, his earliest days in college. There wasn't really a dissenting voice. So from my standpoint, I was shocked. And, you know, eventually that gives way to disappointment and a little bit of anger. But this was a total surprise to us.
He was asked if the organization should have known about this beforehand.
I don't think we would have hired Jared if we'd known about the conduct beforehand. In fact, I know we wouldn't have. And the question is, should we have known? And, you know, we did a background check. You know, we asked the question, you know, is there anything else we need to know? You know, it wasn't pointed about social media or something of that sort. But, you know, given the length of time that's transpired between the series of incidents and now, you know, I'm confident that, you know, this is not something that we should have known about, should have found out about it, had used other means to inquire, that we would have known about it. To my knowledge, none of the other organizations in which Jared was employed knew about this either.
In just a few minutes, just a little while, we're going to be talking with my friend and colleague, Jessica Mendoza, about the Jared Porter situation. We'll be talking with Tim Kirchen and Sarah Langs as well. And I mentioned later in the podcast, we'll be speaking with Jace Tingler. Now, before we get to all that, Conor McGregor returns to the Octagon on January 23rd in a rematch against Dustin. Now, here we go, Taylor. You like spell out a way that I could pronounce this name. I'm just going to give it a shot, but I need you to jump in and correct me. Poirier?
Poirier, I believe, is Poirier. How it says, according to Google.
Okay, you could have put a Y in there in the description as opposed to EI. And UFC 257 only on ESPN Plus. UFC 257 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99. To order, visit ESPNplus.com/PPV.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Jessica Mendoza is a baseball analyst for ESPN. And Jess, I was texting you yesterday, you know, asking to be on the show. And you, I could tell from the nature of your text and the response to them and the gaps of time, boy, you were all over this Jared Porter news and feeling very strongly about it. Tell me about what your reaction was when you first read that story.
I felt sick, honestly. You know, I always just, I put myself in the woman's shoes, you know, and I felt her, you know, I empathized with her. And, you know, then comes frustration, sadness. I couldn't go to bed that night. I mean, I think everyone got it. It was like later, you know, in the evening, or at least that's when I got it. I was actually on a Women in Baseball call yesterday about it. And like, it was interesting because everyone was like up all night and we were like, shoot, we should have all been calling each other. I just couldn't go to sleep. Even my husband was like, it's okay. Like, you know, and I'm like, but it's not. And I think this one, you know, there's so many different things that come across dealing with women, whether there's domestic violence, you know, sexual assault, you know, in this case, sexual harassment, but it's hard to be a woman in the business and not be able to relate. And to see the text messages and to actually like the photos, you know, it really just made it that much more real. So yeah, I felt sick. I felt frustrated. I felt sad. Literally did not go to sleep that night, just started emailing and texting people. Probably woke up quite a few people. I texted Jeff Passan, was just like, and Mina Kimes, both of them were just like, thank you for doing this. I know this probably wasn't easy. But being able to dig out and get the facts for this, you know, thank you. It was probably like 2 a.m. East Coast time. and then reaching out to our own network and saying, you know, I want to talk about this. Like I have a strong opinion. I just feel like we needed a woman's voice.
I was just heartbroken for the reporter, who's no longer a reporter, and the idea that, you know, the choices that were made by Jarrad Porter, the actions of Jarrad Porter, altered her career path. And that was a dream job for her. And to have that taken away, I mean, that she's never going to regain that. And that when I initially read the story, I was just so sad for her.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we have so few women in the game as it is. We're trying to get more diverse. I feel like the sport is definitely growing that way, as we've seen just with the hires in the last few months. But that hit me too. I was like, we already have so few women, and to know that is a real deterrent, you know, I mean, that is something that, I mean, I would have probably done the same, to be honest. I mean, it's one thing to be sexually harassed, to have it done in your second language in a country that's not even your own, and to have sought help and been turned down and taken, basically told, you know, you can use this to your advantage. I mean, can you even wrap your mind around that? Like, when you're actually trying to get help, trying to figure this out, and you're told that in this business, well, if a guy's attracted to you, use it to your advantage. It's like, oh my gosh, like, what are we doing? Like, how much is the culture that far away from what it should be, that it's not even just the person, but then those covering up for it are also, you know, skewed to that point.
When I read the story, another takeaway for me right away was, this is the tip of the iceberg. You know, having been someone, it's a male dominated culture, and I worked in it for more than 30 years. And I'm like, yeah, there are so many examples of this that we've never heard about, and we're never going to hear about it. Yesterday, in fact, you know, I saw Molly Knight of The Athletic quote in New York Times. She was asked about it. She said, it's so exhausting. It's executives, it's players, it's PR people, it's writers, it's everywhere. It's the culture. Britt Giroli of The Athletic wrote a first person piece about an experience she had in 2012 when she was covering the Baltimore Orioles for MLB.com, where she got a text message from a player who she thought she knew and could trust. And the player said, look, I've got some information for you. And she goes over to the player's, drives over to the team hotel, knocks on the player's door, and the player comes out and tries to kiss her. And as I say, I'm sure that there were a lot of really horrible memories dredged up for a lot of people who work in the sport yesterday from that.
Yeah, it was interesting because myself and Stephanie Apstein from Sports Illustrated were a part of this Women in Baseball call that had been set up months ago, and it happened to be yesterday. And so her and I, you know, get on, and it was 40 women within the industry, within baseball. And, you know, they had sent, of course, like a week out, like, these are questions we're going to go over, these are things, you know, Stephanie with the Astros and, you know, all this stuff. And I got on, we actually all got on early, you know, Stephanie and I, and the person who leads it, Jennifer Wolf, actually, is the one that has gotten all these women together, which, by the way, is such an amazing thing. Anytime there's a woman entering the game, she gets their email, make sure that she's a part of this group. And we're like, why are we going to talk about anything else? Like, this needs, so she kind of sent out like this, you know, letting everyone know, like, hey, like, because I know everyone has, this is such a personal thing, and there might be women that might not want to be a part of this because it brings back so much for pretty much every single person that was on this call. And I got off like 2.5 hours later. And I was like, literally, I told my husband, I was like, I just feel like I've got ran over by a Mack truck. Like, you're just hearing stories, and it's unbelievable. And it was a very, you know, it wasn't recorded. It was like this forum of people I had never met. 90% of the women on this, I didn't even know. But to hear just everybody's experiences, and honestly, like, just, you know, and like, knowing there was so much good, and that was talked about too. I mean, that was a few women brought up, oh my gosh, but there's so many amazing men. I mean, Buster, like, working with you this entire time, it overshadows the fact that, like, there's like, most of the men in the sport are actually completely like, yes, we want women. Yes, we do not want this in the game at all. Like, please. But the problem is that, like, twofold, I feel like, is that the few that do, I feel like there's not enough, you know, speaking up from those around them, you know, because it's so hard as a woman. I can't even, like, describe. And Buster, you've seen this, like, when a woman speaks up, like, the immediate reaction in this case, in this story, I mean, there was proof, like, but we even talked about that. We're like, if there wasn't a picture of his genital area, if there wasn't 62 unanswered texts, what if there were 5? like, and there was no photos. Like, that's still not okay. But it's like, you almost need this like gigantic proof of like, this is what's happening to be able to speak up. And even then she's anonymous because she fears even not being in the business. There's still fear. How sad is that? And yeah, that's where I get, sorry, frustrated, because it's like, there's so much backlash for the women that do speak out.
I did a couple of shows on this, and the question drives me crazy always in those, in these situations. Well, why didn't she report it sooner? And you're like, are you kidding me? Like, you know, given the culture of the sport and given the fact that there, you know, that there isn't necessarily an obvious place to get to. And I want to talk to you about that in a second, about structural change. But you mentioned, you and I worked together in Sunday Night Baseball for years. I remember the moment being most heartbroken for you as a friend, and sorry, getting emotional thinking about it. You know, we had the playoff game between the Mets and the Astros, and actually the Mets and the Giants, and Madison Bumgarner was great. It was a great broadcast. I didn't screw up. We managed to get through without blowing it completely. And we're feeling really good about it. And like our group, you know, Dan Shulman, Aaron Boone, you, me, we're back in the car and we're ready to drive back to the hotel. And I got a text message from someone with the Houston Astros trying to get your phone number because one of their minor leaguers had been tweeting out something attacking you, basically because you're a woman. And I remember, you know, getting that text message, and the person who's trying to reach out with me was being nice and was like, look, you know, how do I get in touch with Jessica? I want to apologize on behalf of the organization, blah, blah, blah. And I showed you the phone. You were sitting next to me in the car, and just the look on your face, you were just so sad. Like, you had just had this great experience in broadcast. And I think your words to me at that moment were, you know, this is never going to stop. And just feeling just so heartbroken for you that was your experience.
Thank you. This is what I mean. It helps so much to know that the team around you like has your back, you know, and it's always gonna be there, but like, I don't, and that was kind of this thing on the call yesterday was like, we're never going to change this. And I'm like, I'll never feel that way. Like, I do believe it will change. And the reason is, Buster, because of people like you, like the emotion that just gave you. And I've met so many men who have daughters or, you know, or just great, strong women that are in their life, wives, moms, whoever. And they're like, how can we change this? You know, how can we make this better? And that gives me such hope, because it's people like you that just have to continue to speak up when they see a guy as a reporter walks by, you know, make a comment. It's those little things that we stop, that we say, dude, not cool. Like, stop. And I personally believe, and I said this yesterday, if we can be more proactive, you know, every team has, I'm sure, some sort of sexual harassment training, but more times than not, I imagine, and I'm sure it varies from team to team, they roll in some, you know, TV, they pop in a video, or they have a PR guy come and read off a list of things that you're not supposed to do. And everyone's on their phones, and one more meeting out of like all the freaking meetings that you have in spring training or whatever. But to actually have a woman come in and just tell her story. And I know it takes a lot of brave women to do this, but I brought up, you know, Stephanie Epstein, or I brought up, you know, just there's so many women out there that if they could just actually get the room to see them as a human being and what it's like, it doesn't even have to be a woman's experience, like true sexual harassment, but someone who's just experienced walking into a clubhouse where sometimes men are naked. Like, I mean, it's part of like just the natural culture of like what you're doing when you're walking in to do your job. So just give from like, just my point of view, a woman's point of view, just what that feels like alone from the get-go, the uncomfort, what you have to get over, the things you have to do, you know, to feel comfortable, let alone just like, it helps so much to have a guy just be respectful, to say something, just to say, hey, dude, like, stop freaking like pulling your towel down when she walks by, or, you know, those little things that like are so huge. And I see it more and more and more, but it's the proactive with the organizations that I really feel like needs to happen. Because yeah, when it's public and it's a big deal, of course there's the firings and the, oh, this is ridiculous. Our Steve Cohen integrity, we'll never do this, you know. I want to know Steve Cohen and the Mets, their integrity from day one. Like, what are they doing now to be proactive with the players, with the organization? And I'm sure in his heart, he does not want any of this. But what are they doing to stop it? And that's my biggest thing, is not reacting when the news is out and a story comes out. But what are we doing from the very beginning to make sure that this does not happen?
And I really hope, Jess, along those lines, that Major League Baseball moving forward, lack of a better way to describe it, finds like a czar to oversee the situation. What was so clear from Jeff and Mina's reporting is that this reporter had no idea where to go with this. Well, that needs to change, so that if you're someone working in baseball with a team, you're a member of the PR staff who, you know, gets a text message from a player that's not appropriate, or if you're a member of the media, you know exactly where to go. And I apologize because I'm going to throw her name out there, but you know her personality. I think of someone like Jean Afterman of the Yankees, you know, assistant general manager. She is such a great advocate. And to have someone like that be in a high profile position, Major League Baseball announces this person's going to be in this job to handle situations like this and to be an advocate for women who work in the sport, I think would be really important. So if there are texts or some situation that happens that there's a clear place for women to go in order to get help
of trust
and support.
Trust.
Right. Exactly.
That's the biggest thing is we talked about this yesterday, is like, there's HR departments for every organization, but they're like, literally one woman was like, I had a situation where literally like a guy, like, I mean, it was bad. And she was like, I went to, you know, someone within the organization, didn't tell them. I was like, what, how do we handle this? And they're like, oh, you go online, you fill out like your claim, and then you send it to the HR directive, which is some like, not even person, but just like this overall place. And she's like, are you freaking kidding me? I'm going to write what just happened to me on something and just send it out into this portal where God knows where it's going, and then hope that like this trusted him. She's like, heck no. So I never said anything. And she wanted to, and that's the thing. And so like, actually Jean Afterman was on this call. Raquel Ferreira, by the way, is another one with the Red Sox. That's just a total badass. Like, oh my gosh, she told us stories about like, yeah, I don't think anyone would mess with her because of how she's just like, I mean, she would straight up slap people and I wouldn't doubt it. But we talked about exactly that, is having a trusted place, having somewhere, a group of women. And we even said like multi-language, so that you could, if English is your second language, there would be that option, and it would be 100% like confidential and never pushing to take action, but more of like, some women were like, I just want to know, like, sometimes I get text messages and I want to know, like, is this okay? Is this part of the business? You know, like, because sometimes it's that, like, you think that maybe this is normal, you know, like, I don't know, I'm new. Like, one intern was talking about that. Like, I sometimes get messages from guys talking to me about stuff that I'm like, I'm not sure, but I don't know who to ask, you know? And every woman is different too. Like, you know, some women, it's like, I'm not okay with you texting me past 8 o'clock. Like, just don't send me a message. And other women are like, you know, like Raquel could be like, hey, cause she's like a mom to so many of these guys. Hey, you need me at 2 a.m. Like, I am there, you know? So having just a female group, and I agree with Jean Afterman leading the way. I mean, she reminds me so much of Billie Jean King. Like, she is that like total. And I said that, I'm like, thank you for being like this, like, advocate, leader, like, just her presence on this call, Buster. She's like the godmother, like, comes in, there's just this light around her, and she can also like punch people in the face. And it just makes you feel like she's got your back.
And anybody who goes through that, like this reporter did, needs someone with them to punch somebody in the face, you know, like, to have that strength and that power. And I hope Major League Baseball gets to a point where they arm women with that possibility to deal with situations like this.
Yeah, that my reaction was actually to reach out to Rob Manfred yesterday. Like, my poor husband, like, what he went through in 24 hours, like, me not sleeping. I was on the phone, just like going crazy, got up early, was like, just, I mean, all day yesterday, it was like my freaking mission in life to like, just help and do things. And I was like, I'm calling Manfred, like, okay, like, we need to get MLB to change. And he's like, wait, Manfred, the commissioner? I was like, yes. He's like, okay. he was just trying to, because I was so fired up and so, you know, but I was like, we need to have something in place for every organization. We can't just trust that they're going to show some online. I mean, at ESPN, we have sexual harassment videos that are shown. And I can promise you, most of the men that we work with don't, like, I hate, but they probably don't even watch them. If they do, that's like, you know, on background. And I'm sitting here, I'm watching the sexual harassment video, you know, like the training going, but I want the guys that, like, you know, that are around this to watch this, like, and even then, like, for it to really resonate. And it's not good enough, just, I feel like, sometimes to have a video when it's baseball, when it's, you know, the culture, like I said, you have a dynamic where a lot of, especially when you're talking about reporting, journalism, all of that is happening in like a changing area. Like, right. There's just that from like the core of it. And then from there, knowing there's a long history of just, not just harassment, but just the ability to, like, I can say anything I want to you and no one's going to say a dang thing.
Right. All right, Jess. Well, I hope you get a chance to get some sleep.
Yeah, well, I'm running on adrenaline right now, and I'm telling you, like, we will change this. Like, I do believe that. And, you know, it might not every man, because we can't change, but it's just more of like the allies around, you know. And I'm so grateful for you, Buster. That's going to make me emotional, because it takes men like you for women that work in this industry to, like, just feel confident. Like, because there were definitely times where I'm like, I don't think I can do this. And it's hard, but it helps so much to know that you have allies that aren't just other women.
Seamheads rejoice.
Nerd alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirkchen on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirkchen covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, you're a grandfather since the last time I talked to you. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's more than pretty cool. Kelly Kirkchen gave birth to a boy on January the 8th, Carson, and she's doing great. Baby's doing great. I spent a week with her and her husband, Mark, and they're doing exceptionally well. So I'm 64 years old. I'm a grandfather, and I can tell you, Buster, when that happens to you, hopefully someday, there are no words to describe it. It was as glorious as I hoped it would be. And what strength those kids have shown. I'm so proud of both of them.
Tell me what it was like to hold Carson in your arms for the first time.
Well, he's really little. And that was an adjustment. I held my two kids, for so long. But you forget how little babies are. But when my daughter presented him to me and said, you know, Daddy, here's your grandson, that's just about as good as it gets right there.
Oh, my goodness. I'm getting weepy thinking about you having that opportunity to do that. Look, there's no easy segue into the conversation about Jared Porter. I just got done talking with Jessica Mendoza about this. And I mentioned to her, I really feel like that this situation revealed the need for more structural support within baseball for people who are victims of this. People who have, you know, who get texts like these, who have people approach them this way. What do you think?
Well, I'm 100% behind you on this, Buster, and of course behind Jess on this. What really struck me and what really bothered me is when we found out that no one asked any women about Jared Porter in the vetting process, and that's going to have to. We're going to have more structure than that, Buster. Just like you said, we have to do a better job of making sure that the right people are entering the game, because this was a terrible thing for the Mets, terrible thing for Major League Baseball, and of course for the poor woman that had to put up with this. So it's time to do a much better job on this right now.
Absolutely. The tip of the iceberg, in my opinion. It's a male-dominated industry, and I would not at all be surprised if we hear more stories come spilling out of this. And shoot, even yesterday, reporters like Britt Giroli relating her experience of having a player, you know, text her and call her up to his room and then try to kiss her. It's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, again, I've covered the game for so long and so many female reporters and writers who I admire and respect so much. And this just can't happen. It's 2021. It's time to end all this. And maybe this is, as Sandy Alderson said, this is a wake-up call. It should be a wake-up call for everyone involved.
So after the memo went out from the commissioner's office last week that the teams are going to try to start spring training on time, you could get the sense from team to team like, oh, okay, here we go. And you do wonder if that spurred a lot of the conversation, the deals we've seen the last week. You know, DJ LeMahieu, Corey Kluber, the Blue Jays going crazy. I'm excited about what the Blue Jays are doing. What about you?
Well, it's impossible not to. I mean, first off, they had to add a closer. And just go look at Kirby Yates' numbers again from 2018, 2019. 2019 season was unbelievably good. And if he can have anything close to that, then they've got the back end of the games completely closed. The guy's struck out 400 batters in 282 innings. Not only does he get people out, he strikes them out. And that is so critical in today's day and age. So he adds something enormous to the back end, assuming he's at his best. And George Springer adds even more. My goodness, he's one of the most dynamic leadoff hitters the game has seen. He's an amazing postseason player. They had an absolute need in that lineup. And like you always like to do, Buster, right out their lineup after a star player joins it. It's a pretty good lineup they got right there, especially with George Springer at the top. So I think the Jays have gone from a playoff team last year to a demonstrably better team today. And I wouldn't want any part of the Blue Jays going forward, especially with young talent there and more on the way.
Now, it's possible that Jim Crane, the owner of the Astros, jumps in and says to Michael Brantley, look, we really need you. We want to bring you back. We're going to try to compete in 2021. You know, they've had good conversations, but the Blue Jays have made it clear they would like Springer and Brantley as a package deal. When you look at the possibility you mentioned about writing out lineups of Springer and Brantley in the middle of that Blue Jays lineup, where would you rank that lineup in baseball? You know, top five, top 10?
Well, it would certainly be top 10. And if Brantley signs, we might have to go higher than that. And yes, the Astros, by the way, really need another hitter in their outfield with what they have lost now with Springer. But if the Jays could go one more and add another middle of the order bat to that team with all those young guys around and with Vlad Guerrero Jr. looking, at least from the photos, so much better, so much fitter and trimmer, this is a very dangerous team. I'm still not sold their starting pitching is ready to be great, but it might be good enough with the way Yates can add to the bullpen and what they could potentially do after this to their lineup.
Even if they add Brantley, I still think the Yankees over 162 games are the better team. I think they're more consistent offensively. Plus they have Gerrit Cole at the top of the rotation, a really good bullpen. How close do you think the Blue Jays, if they get Brantley, and there seems to be a real chance that's going to happen, if they get Brantley, how close are the Blue Jays to catching the Yankees in your eyes?
Well, the Yankees are still better than the Blue Jays. And I think they'll still be better than the Blue Jays, even with Brantley. But Blue Jays will suddenly become a real threat to the Yankees, a real threat in the American League if they can add both of those guys. And Buster, help me here. I just can't believe the Yankees are done in what they're doing this offseason. They've done some good things. Getting LeMahieu back was obviously the most important thing they had to do. But they have to add more pitching. They have to add somebody else. And I just refuse to believe that this is the exact team they're going to open the season.
I think there's a chance that they have done their biggest lifting. I do think they'll add a pitcher, but I think if they do add a pitcher, it's going to be like a third-tier starter or a second-tier reliever. They'd like to bring back Brett Gardner for their outfield. But here's the thing with the Yankees. It's pretty clear, like a lot of teams since the 2016 CBA was signed, they want to get under the competitive balance tax at $210 million. And think about that, Tim. The Yankees in 2021 are going to spend about the same that the 2005 Yankees spent. That's where the Yankees are right now in terms of their spending. Now, they could blow that up as we go along, maybe during the season, holes emerge, you know, maybe they make some aggressive trades and they go for it. But they seem to be wanting to paint within the lines. And one of the reasons why is that when you look at sort of how the talent has moved this winter, the National League seems to be getting stronger and stronger. The Padres, the Mets making their moves. On the other hand, the American League East, which has always driven the arms race in baseball, hasn't really done that this winter.
Right. And, you know, again, when you're the Yankees and you haven't won since 2009 and you haven't been since 2009, this isn't good enough. And they have to look at those powerhouses that are being built around the major leagues and saying, if we're going to win the World Series, which ultimately is all that matters to the Yankees, they have to get better from here. So I admire them on one hand for keeping the payroll down and not being ridiculous with their money like they've been so many times, certainly under George Steinbrenner. But I'm with you. I think they're going to, I don't think they're going to go get Trevor Bauer and add him into the rotation, but I can't believe that they will get three quarters of the way through this season and realize we are one more player away from winning the World Series. They're going to go get that guy, no matter how much he costs, at least as a rental, because they have to win the World Series this year, especially with the way it ended last year. That was just torturous for a Yankees fan.
We're going to be talking with Jace Tingler, the manager of the Padres, coming up. How close are the Padres to catching the Dodgers at the top of baseball?
Well, obviously, like everyone else, I love what the Padres did. The way they've upgraded their starting pitching is ridiculous. What A.J. Preller did this winter was amazing without giving up. You know, maybe his top five prospects, incredible. But the Dodgers are still the Dodgers, Buster. We cannot forget how great they were last year. They went 43-17 with certain problems going on there. I think they'll be better in 2021. May, Gonsolin, Urias, all getting more of a chance to pitch, and another full, potentially 162 games from Mookie Betts. And they have all the money and all the resources to figure out what to do at third base. If it's not Justin Turner, if it's Marcus Semien, if it's somebody, the Dodgers are the best team in baseball. They proved it, and they still are. But the Padres took another gigantic step towards beating the Dodgers.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot, which I love to do. Give me your top five teams in baseball in terms of a power ranking. I did this on ESPN.com recently. I've got the Dodgers one. I've got the Padres two. I've got the Braves three. I feel like the Braves are incredibly underrated. I've got the Yankees four, and I've got the Mets five. Tell me where you would go.
Well, the Dodgers are one. I totally agree with you on that. I'm gonna move the Yankees up a little bit only because I'm just assuming they're going to add that pitcher they need to add. I've got the Padres three. I love what they've done. The Braves are vastly underrated. Let's not forget how they came, if not for a base running mistake. They might have gone to the World Series last year, and they're getting Mike Soroka back, and they're going to be their pitching has been upgraded with Charlie Morton. So I'm going to say they're four, and I can't believe I'm going to agree with Buster on all this. The Mets, the Lindor thing changes everything, Buster. Yeah. This is not a surprise. They got him without giving up a major piece to their team. And even though they lost out on Springer, they're not done making their moves. They still have one more big thing to do. It could be Bauer. It could be somebody else. But I can't believe that Steve Cohen's going to look around with a chance to take on the Yankees head-to-head and not do one more thing. So I think those are my five. I just have a slightly different order than you.
Yeah, and the Mets apparently in their bidding on Springer went to about $125 million. They weren't close. I think to get him, that they would have had to have blown the Blue Jays out of the water, maybe go to 175. I think George Springer, from what I understand, got very comfortable with the idea of playing in Toronto as the process went along here. We opened the show today, the sad news about Don Sutton. I grew up a huge Dodger fan. He was the ace pitcher you could always rely on. He was the workhorse. He was the guy who would take the ball all the time. And I loved him as a broadcaster, Tim, because he would tell you exactly what he thought.
Oh, he was a great broadcaster, great, but he was an even better pitcher. I mean, Buster, as we know, Cy Young, Nolan Ryan, the only pitchers ever to make more starts than Don Sutton. He's the only pitcher ever to make 30 or more starts in 20 different seasons. No one's ever done that before. Look at the guys today. We consider them workhorses when they make 30 starts. He did it in 20 years. He was the first pitcher to strike out 100 or more batters in 20 consecutive seasons. Not to mention, take the ERA, take the wins, take the strikeouts. There are five other pitchers in history that can match those numbers. And I really bothers me when people say someone is a compiler and he just did it. He was good enough to take the ball for a team every day for 20, every fifth day for 23 years. He is not an overrated pitcher. To me, he's an underrated pitcher. And as far as broadcasters go, Buster, I love to talk to him because there was no filter with Don Sutton. But here's the key, Buster. He wasn't an angry pitcher who said, you know, everything was better in my day. He once told me about Greg Maddux. While he's covering Greg Maddux as a broadcaster, he said, Greg Maddux is everything I ever wanted to be in a pitcher, but I wasn't. I wasn't good enough. That's how great Greg Maddux is. Wow. And it was for Don Sutton to acknowledge something like that just speaks to his not only his respect for Maddux, but his respect for the people who came before him and the people that came after him.
I was reading the New York Times obituary written by my former teammate, Richard Sandemeyer, and he had a great description of Sutton. You know, while growing up, his dad was a sharecropper in Alabama, and while growing up, his goal was not to become a superstar pitcher. That wasn't what he envisioned. He just envisioned to becoming somebody that could be relied upon, and nobody was relied upon more than him during his career in baseball.
That's and let's sure. not forget, Buster, one of the great days, if not the greatest day in the history of the Orioles, the greatest weekend was spoiled by Don Sutton. Remember in 82, the Orioles won three games in a row to get to Sunday tied. And now it's Don Sutton against Jim Palmer in one of the great final day matchups in baseball history. Two Hall of Famers. Robin Yount hit two homers off of Jim Palmer to win that game. But Don Sutton was the winning pitcher in that game, and that should never be lost on anyone, especially all those Brewer fans.
Yesterday, Jim Palmer tweeted out a picture of a bottle of wine that Don Sutton gave to him, and he said, I've never opened it since you gave it to me, and I never will open it. And he said goodbye to his old friend. Tim, good to talk with you again. Congratulations again.
Well, thank you, Buster. It was one of the great days of my whole life, and for all you men out there being a grandfather, there are no words to describe that.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Numbers game.
Sarah Lang is a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, thanks for joining us on video. I'm looking at the wall behind you. I'm sorry. I think after we've seen with Leslie Jones commenting on everybody's room, on social media. I'm looking at that blank wall, and I know you probably have some cool stuff to put on your wall.
I do. I would not do well by the Room Raider, who I feel like has gone quite viral on social media during all of this. But I do. I'm staring at like a Giancarlo Stanton bobblehead across the room. I have a CeCe Sabathia Star Wars bobblehead, a Giants World Series Champions hat, but I don't have anywhere to set it up that would be behind me, but I'm working on it. There will be a solution within a month. I'm guaranteeing that at this point.
I feel like you need to have like a massive Mets logo would be appropriate, you know, for your favorite team or something with the Giants in honor of your mom.
Yeah. I mean, in my old apartment, I had some stuff set up. I think I had some rally towels and everything else, but it was all like behind the TV. And then if you sit in front of the TV, you have a weird reflection thing going on when it's off. I've thought through this a lot over the last 10, 12 months. How long have we been doing this by now? So one day I will figure it out.
So the last 36 hours has been really difficult in baseball since the Jared Porter story. When you saw that story, what was your initial reaction?
My initial reaction was just, you know, very upset. Of course, I consider myself pretty lucky that I really haven't had any interactions in my time working in baseball, working in sports that have been anywhere close to that level, really nothing that has made me that level of uncomfortable whatsoever. But I know that I'm lucky in that respect. And I know we know what types of things go on. It was a prevailing sentiment on Twitter that nobody was necessarily surprised at exactly the content of everything, despite maybe initial surprise at who the individual was. And I certainly understand that just from conversations with friends, women who are beat reporters and in more source-driven type roles than me. But the most heartbreaking thing to me was just the fact that this woman essentially left the industry because of all of this. I really couldn't get over that for a while. And talking to friends, I mean, it's just so disappointing, upsetting. And you wonder about, you know, young women who are considering getting into this field and if seeing something like that might deter them. And I really hope that it wouldn't. This is an awful thing. And these things do happen. But there is so much good. And there is so much good to working in this industry. And there are so many good people. And it's not every single day, every single moment. So I just hope that if there are any young women who are considering giving up on their dreams because of something like this, that they can have some faith in the institution and the infrastructure, that things will get better, and that we are working on a better future for them.
Along those lines, when you talk about infrastructure, one thing I mentioned Jessica Mendoza, I mentioned Tim Kirkchen, I really feel like that baseball could use a more defined infrastructure to deal with situations like this. For example, I'm sure this reporter who I haven't spoken with probably was not aware of a person to call, a number to call, somebody to deal with it. It's pretty clear from her description of events that she was just really struggling with how to respond. And I think that has to be made absolutely clear as we move forward, you know, by organizations, by Major League Baseball, by anybody under baseball's umbrella.
Of course. And I think that goes for, you know, so many institutions. It's not even just baseball or even just sports. I think that in certain cases, you're aware of HR, but you don't know exactly even how to contact them. And I think with baseball and with reporting, especially when you are just straight up being a reporter like that, your day to day is the press box in the clubhouse during normal times. And it's so autonomous and you don't really have any higher power. You have a boss, you have an editor, but you don't really have someone that you feel like you're going to in that way. So I do think that that's an issue that women and anyone who feels any sort of abuse or issues in the workplace run into. And I think that it really does go beyond specifically baseball, just to the idea that people need to be supported and know what those resources are. I think that that could certainly be clear.
I would love to see baseball put a high profile woman in that job in baseball like this is, and to make a big deal out of it, you know, make an announcement. This person, and I'm thinking of someone like a Gene Afterman of the Yankees, who has that type of presence. You know, she's assistant general manager of the Yankees, where everybody knows, okay, if something happens, this is who you can reach out to and to have some support. You know, one of the questions that just drove me crazy yesterday, and I saw it in a lot of media platforms, inevitably asked by men, why did it take so long for her to report? Give me a break. What was your reaction when you heard that?
Yeah, exactly what you just said. I mean, that's honestly, that's the question we always see when there's these kinds of stories. And it's one of the most maddening parts to me, because people who are asking that question have never been even remotely in the type of situation that would lead to this kind of story or anything else. And part of it is, as you're saying, maybe something infrastructure wise where you don't know who to go to. And part of it is the fear that she discussed of, you know, bringing dishonor to her country and to herself and losing her job and everything else. So to question why anything took so long to me is just so, so senseless, honestly.
I mentioned to Tim, there's no easy segue to go from what happened with Jared Porter to talking about baseball, but I wanted to talk about some baseball with you. The Blue Jays make the big moves yesterday. George Springer, we're waiting to see if they also invest in Michael Brantley. Assume that, you know, that Brantley winds up with the Blue Jays, just for argument's sake. Among the other teams, which teams do you think are under most pressure right now? Give me three teams under the most pressure to make deals.
So thinking of just three is honestly pretty hard these days, because we've seen a pretty slow offseason developing. Obviously, we did get a couple of moves last night, even in addition to Springer. So hopefully there is some momentum picking up. But the first team that pops to mind to me, and it's been the team for the last few offseasons now, is the Angels. I mean, we need to see Mike Trout not just get to the playoffs, because maybe the roster they have right now might get them there because their division is so weak, but we need to see them go deep in the playoffs. And he is not getting any younger, and this constantly stresses me out of like, is Mike Trout really not going to win a World Series? I don't want him on that list. They've made some additions. Obviously, they did sign Jose Quintana reportedly last night. He's projected for a 4.3 or higher ERA, depending what projection system you're using. So to me, that doesn't really fill the pitching hole. It adds some innings, because the rotation online right now on the Angels website lists three pitchers as their rotation. So it does fill at least a bit of a void there. But I do think that they need a better pitcher, whether it's via trade or in free agency. Obviously, Trevor Bauer is still available. So they're the first team that pops to mind to me. And it is related to the Blue Jays, and it is related to the move that happened with George Springer officially leaving the Astros, because I think that the ALS got significantly worse. The A's are probably going to win that division, but I think they're a pretty flawed team, especially without Liam Hendricks, without Marcus Semien, without really anybody at second base. So if the Angels can get another starting pitcher, I think that they could potentially win that division even easily. Another team that came to mind to me, it's not one specific team, is literally anybody in the NL Central. If you look at the projected standings on Fangraphs right now, the best NL Central team is projected to be the Brewers with a 499 winning percentage. I triple check that of like, who did I miss? I did not miss anybody. We've seen that the Cubs are obviously more in a selling mode. The Brewers aren't really a team to add big name players lately. And the Reds sort of did their winning the offseason thing last year, but somebody has to do something, because, you know, it's looking like the NL West in the mid 2000s when like the Padres won with like a 500 winning percentage. And I don't want that to happen. And the other team that came to mind to me is the Phillies, only because they're in this situation where, which we had with the Yankees until a couple days ago when they signed DJ LeMahieu, where we're all kind of expecting JT Realmuto to end up there, but he hasn't yet. And without that, they're not competing with the Mets and Braves.
Yeah, 100%. In fact, I wondered if when Dave Dombrowski met with the Phillies ownership before he took over that job, if the conversation was, look, we either have to spend money to try to keep up with these other teams, with the where the Braves are, where the Mets are, the Nationals, who the champions the last full season. And if you're not going to do that, then we need to sell and we need to retool. But you can't sit in the middle and not do anything. You know, it's funny you mentioned about the National League Central. I look at that division, and again, the Cubs have made their decision to cut back. But I feel like if the Cardinals don't win the division, there should be an investigation. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they have the resources. They're a strong and is a relatively strong financial position. They know that whenever the stadium gates open, that place is going to be filled with all those great fans wearing red jerseys and red Cardinals jerseys. And with Jack Flaherty and the good players they have, they should win that division.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, when I make picks for divisions in a couple months here, I'll probably pick them to win the NL Central. Yeah. And I think they're always the right pick in a year where you're not sure about the division, because it always just ends up being the Cardinals with their depth, with their next man up and everything else. But, you know, and the difference between them and what the Brewers are projected to do is like a couple win percentage points. I'm sure that's based on, you know, expectation of a bounce back for Christian Yelich, maybe more than anything else. But I do think that the Cardinals probably win that division. You know, there's some projections of a pretty good season for Dylan Carlson, which would definitely put them maybe in a different echelon. But it's just tough to look at that division where we were expecting a dynasty for a few years, and then it looks like we might be expecting, you know, two great teams. It looked like the Brewers might be almost up there with the Cubs for a couple of years there, you know, maybe a 2 year span, and then here we are with no team projected to be above 500.
All right, Sarah, it's always great to talk with you, and you're going to be part of, and I think we're going to be able to send out a Zoom link on this, but you're going to be part of a hot stove panel that we're going to have on Saturday, January 30th at about 7:30. Yourself and Galen Carr, Director of Player Personnel for the Dodgers, Ollie Drake. This is something I do at my old high school every year, and you've done it with us for 3-4 years, so I look forward to that.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you for having me as part of that. It's always a lot of fun to just talk baseball, you know, at the end of January with you guys. So I love it.
Thanks, Sarah. Jay Singler is the manager of the San Diego Padres, and he led them back to the playoffs for the first time since 2006 with what they accomplished in 2020. And Jace, what a fun off season for you guys after a great season. Tell me about how you're communicating with AJ Preller, your boss, as you guys go through this off season of making a lot of moves and trying to be aggressive and getting better.
Yeah, we're in communication all the time. You know, AJ and his front office crew and the player development and scouting crew has put us in such a great position to be able to make some exciting moves. So we're excited about going forward, you know, for sure. And even more impressive, you know, with the moves, I think Baseball America, you know, was it a couple days ago, released, you know, their top 100 prospects. And after all the moves we made, you know, from obviously this offseason, but even starting at the trade deadline last year with Clevinger and Nola and company, you know, Rosenthal, that crew that came in, you know, it's really nice having, you know, seven of the top 100 prospects still today. And that's, you know, that's hats off to the organization on a lot of fronts. Certainly the front office, but also the development crew down there and the scouting crew on all sides.
So, Jason, and you're right to point out that this flurry of movement by the Padres didn't just start this offseason. Like last year before the trade deadline, in the year of the pandemic, a lot of teams holding back resources, being concerned, and you guys were incredibly aggressive. Tell me about the first time you got a sense that that was going to be the case.
I think it was probably a couple weeks before the trade deadline last year. We were playing good baseball. We felt that we'd got a pretty good core crew that is coming together age-wise. And, you know, so I sensed that we weren't making moves for 2020 or any one-year deal. We were looking to build something special. And so that's what the moves have been behind. And you look at the majority of the moves, they're not one-year deals. They're, you know, we're looking for the right type of guy to be with the team 2, 3, 4+ years. And that's kind of been the philosophy going forward.
This offseason, when was the first time you heard the name Blake Snell in connection with you guys?
I don't know, maybe a month and a half before the trade happened. But, you know, with that being said, there's a lot of names, you know, thrown out in every year, certainly in the off season. And that there's a lot of scenarios that are thrown out. So when did I think it had a chance to be, you know, real? You know, maybe 3 weeks or so before the trade happened.
What do you remember about when you officially get the either the text or the call from AJ saying, "Hey, we got it done. We got it done."
I remember just kind of laughing and smiling. I was talking with him on the phone, and you know, a lot of things were kind of lined up, you know, behind that. So, you know, there were other moves going on, you know, as well. So, you know, we quickly, you know, not a lot of time to celebrate. You move on to the next one and keep going, but a lot of excitement for sure.
Tell me about your, cause I know, you know, managers these days, a lot of the communication with their own players are text. Your text with your players as these things are going on, as you're hearing from different guys.
Yeah, I think on that one particular, you know, there was a pretty good text line going, you know, with, you know, myself, a couple of the players, a couple of the coaching staff, and then the news broke and, you know, a lot of people, you know, were hitting us up. But I think overall there was a lot of excitement. Most importantly, a lot of excitement for, you know, our players as, not that we need a ton of motivation to start getting ready, but I think a little extra adrenaline shot, you know, helps getting ready for spring training.
All right. What's the dynamic now between the Padres and the Dodgers? You know, I was one of my great regrets this year is not being able to go to ballparks and travel as much is we didn't get firsthand that taste of Dodgers Padres, which, you know, because of the way teams are going, that might be the best rivalry in terms of competition going in baseball right now.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, a lot of respect. I know we respect them. Obviously, they're the you know, World Series champions, and they've got a hell of a team. You know, so we're excited about, you know, getting to work. We're excited about getting down to spring training, getting our group together. We got a lot of work that needs to be done. We've got some ability. We've got some guys that can play. We're going to need some breaks. We're going to need to stay healthy. It's going to be our job. We've got to come together, you know, as a unit. We got to build some chemistry. We got to learn to play with one another on the field. We think we do that. We think we can play with anyone in the game.
Now, what we saw during the playoffs last year, what we saw during the regular season between the two teams, there was a lot of passion on the field. But as you know better than I ever would, before the games, it's a different dynamic. Tell me about like your relationship with Dave Roberts, for example, or members of the Dodger coaching staff when guys are taking batting practice before games. What's the communication?
You know, with last year in particular, there's not as much overlap, right, or interaction, you know, due to the protocols and COVID things like that. But I know there's a ton of respect, at least on my side, towards them. You know, Dave's always been, you know, nice, cordial. He's been one of the first guys when I got the job that reached out. And so I've got a lot of respect for him. He's had some really good teams there. And, you know, they're like I said, they were the class of the game last year, winning the World Series. And so, you know, we're excited to get on the field, get our best game ready, and we're excited to play.
Jason, one of your peers said to me the other day in conversation that Fernando Tatis Jr. is the best athlete he's ever seen on a baseball field. Give me an example of something that jumped out at you that you saw on one particular player in a moment where he did something to you go, holy crow.
I don't know if there was anything in a game because we'd seen so many things in practice. I think maybe it was at home when we're playing the Astros. It looked like a base hit into shallow left. I think it was a ball he drop stepped on, went back and kind of went up in the Jordan kind of pose and got up high and you know, caught the ball. But because of the dynamics last year, with the season being delayed, he was at the stadium. We were working out. We actually have a basketball goal up on the concourse. And so we were doing, I don't want to say some trick shots, but I actually went up on a balcony and threw a pass. I may have been, I don't know, 50, 60 feet above him. It bounced and I was trying to get it close to the rim. It wasn't that close to the rim. And I remember him just taking off and reaching back, grabbing it and windmilling it home. And I'm like, you know, and it was on a 10-foot regulation rim. So as far as, you know, when you see things like that, you know, you kind of see him move around, and we would do other things. We'd play soccer. We would, you know, do things during that time. So when it came to, was I surprised with anything? No, because I'd kind of seen a lot, you know, before that during the COVID time.
Before last year, I asked Kevin Long about Juan Soto, who is such an unbelievable player at a young age. what's the greatest challenge for Juan Soto going forward? And he said to keep pushing himself at age 24, 25. As you look at Fernando Tatis Jr., what do you see in terms of being his greatest challenges as he gets older?
Well, I think just to continue to grow, and the exciting thing, you know, for him is he is driven. He wants to win. He wants to continue to improve. And so a lot of people, you know, this offseason, we were talking, should he play winter ball? Should he not? You know, et cetera. And, you know, this guy wanted to play. He wanted to go work on things. He had been working on things. He wanted to test drive some of the things he's been working on in the game. And when you kind of think of it that way, there's risk in everything we do. And we certainly don't want him to get hurt. But I love the drive. I love the challenge of him challenging himself in improving. And so I think that's most important. If he maintains that, he's going to continue to grow. I think the sky's the limit. And, you know, the second thing is just understanding the strike zone and understanding how guys are going to pitch him. He made huge leaps from 2019 to 20. If he can continue to make those leaps inside the strike zone, I think, you know, he's a potential MVP.
I asked staffers from other teams about the change in him. And it's interesting because, you know, us in the media, we love to focus on the big play, the one you mentioned, the opposite field home run. And what I heard a lot from folks with other teams was, no, the biggest change in him was the boring plays. The routine plays, they felt like he had much better focus from 19 to 20. And I know you weren't there in 19, but from your perspective, did you see that sort of growth?
It's really cool to hear you say that, because when Bobby Dickerson sat down with him after reviewing plays from 19, when they sat down together in spring training, that was the goal, was make the routine play or the boring play. And that was absolutely the goal. So when you hear it from an outside source, it's pretty cool to hear.
Last one for you. What did last year mean to you? Going over the Padres, first year managing in the big leagues, for you personally, you know, what was your takeaway?
I think just that the environment that we have, you know, with the group of players, building those relationships, same thing with the staff. Obviously, you know, we made the playoffs. We hadn't done that in a long time. So as good as that is, we came up short. And so now I think we've got even more hunger to go further to get to the World Series. And that's just kind of where it is. I think last year was a great foundation, but we've got to build off that foundation. And so, you know, we've got a lot of hungry guys that are wanting to win. Winning's not easy. We're going to have to sacrifice things going forward. I think we're just excited for, you know, the challenge ahead.
Yeah, and you guys are going to be must-watch TV. Jace, thanks for doing this.
Buster, thanks for having me, and you take care.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday. Real quick, though, I want to give the hard sell to the new Jalen and Jacoby podcast. They do their TV show 5 days a week, but now they are doing a podcast exclusive twice a week, and I am producing that show, and it's a lot of fun. They got a little more of a free-flowing environment, as you can attest to on a podcast versus a television show, yeah. So give them a listen.
Absolutely. And look, there's a lot of stuff to be excited about right now going on in the NBA. Like the other day, I was sitting down with my son. I'm like, we got to watch James Harden's first game with Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah.
It's those games now are kind of must watch for me.
Absolutely. And that's basically.
Along with the Charlotte Hornets, by the way. The Charlotte Hornets in my house, because my son is a Hornets fan. Yeah, that's the other team we watch all the time.
Hey, they're not terrible either. That's not the worst team to watch
right now.
They're
hanging in there. They're doing okay. Their offense is better.
You could watch the Washington Wizards every night. That would be bad if they ever play again. Let's go to the tweets here. Elizabeth Hart at eHart Tweets writes in, Lindor signed the day after your last podcast. LeMahieu signed the day after your latest. Can you please do more podcasts so more players will sign? Which other big pieces are still left on the board, Buster, that will inevitably sign tomorrow?
Well, right, exactly. This is going to drop, and then Trevor Bauer will sign.
Right.
I got to be honest, as we look at the lay of the land, I don't know where Trevor Bauer is going to wind up. You just don't know if there's a team out there willing to spend the type of money that he might be looking for after a Cy Young caliber season. I do think JT Realmuto is going to wind up back with the Philadelphia Phillies. You know, the Phillies have been engaged with him lately. they have a strong need there, and I think he's an important figure to their fan base.
Next up, we got our pal Corey Rukert at CoreyR_12. He writes in, with Theo Epstein's new gig at Major League Baseball, is the job of the commissioner in his future?
Yeah, no. No, here's the deal. The person who is the commissioner now is essentially a lawyer for the owners.
Right.
It is a big advocate for owners. I think a lot of fans, casual fans, sort of view the commissioner's office as being down the middle. That has not been the case since Faye Vincent was forced out and Bud Selig took over. You know, since Bud took over for a while as the interim commissioner, the commissioner clearly is in the camp of the owners. And that's the way it's going to be going forward. And I can't see Theo ever fully embracing a position like that or maybe even being offered it.
All right. Last one for today. Our pal Cameron Black at blind_QB. He writes in, before the season starts, I always like to read a piece of nonfiction baseball literature. What would you recommend and what would be on your baseball reading list before a season starts?
I always say Lords of the Realm. John Helliard's great book about ownership in baseball, about the business of baseball. Look, it came out in the early 90s, but there are just so many funny anecdotes about owners and about players, about all-time great players. It's a hilarious book. And if you want to know partly the reason why we are where we are, where we have this massive gulf between the Players Association and Major League Baseball, just read that book and you'll understand why.
There you go, Cameron. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag BleacherTweets on Twitter. Please subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks, everyone.
And my thanks today to Jessica Mendoza, to Jace Tingler, to Sarah Langs, to Tim Kirkchen. Thanks for listening, everybody. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.